Hey veterans, one quick note before today's show. I'd love to know how I can better support you in the veteran community. If you have any suggestions, it could be a guest or a guest type you'd like interviewed, it could be a particular challenge you're facing that doesn't currently have a good solution, or it could even be data you'd love to be investigated. Whatever it is, drop me a line at beyondtheuniform.io or on email at justin@beyondtheuniform.io, and I'll do my best to help out. Thanks and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 51 with Bob Underwood.
I've been retired for 6.5 years now, and some of the things that I've learned are, hey, it's different after you leave active duty. The people are different, and your motivations are going to be different. And one of the things you need to kind of figure out how to do is relax. Because most things just aren't as important as they were when you were wearing a uniform. And that's okay. So that's one thing. It's okay to relax.
The top four reasons to listen to today's episode are, one, start with why. Bob has some incredible advice about figuring out what you want to do with your career and how this is a process that occurs every 3 to 5 years for most people. He talks about finding the why that makes sense to you right now, not the one that made sense in the past, and provides a specific example of how this got him a job at Amazon. Number two, interview prep. Bob has some exceptional advice about preparing for interviews. Rather than using books like 200 Questions to Prepare for an Interview, he provides practical and tactical steps to get ready now. Number three, perspective. Bob left the military and returned shortly after as an active reservist through his retirement. He talks about the perspective this has given him and the advantages of retiring. Number four, business development. At the very end, he describes his job at Eaton in business development, which is a great overview of this role. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find other great episodes and resources. So let's dive in to my interview with Bob Underwood. Well, joining me from Washington, D.C. today, my guest is Robert Underwood. Bob Underwood, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks, Justin. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I wanted to give listeners a quick background on you, Bob. So Bob is a business development manager in the electronic manufacturing industry with Eaton. That's a company with nearly 100,000 employees worldwide and over $20 billion in sales. They provide energy-efficient solutions for companies and manufacturers. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served for 25 years as an officer in the Marine Corps, first as a fighter pilot in a variety of capacities, including a candidate for Navy's Blue Angels, and ultimately as a colonel in Quantico, where he was a branch head of reserve affairs and policy. Prior to his work with Eaton, Bob worked at Amazon as a site leader and also as a consultant and in other business development management capacities. Bob, I guess, you know, one other thing that I'd point out as an addition to the intro, one of the reasons I was excited to connect with Bob, he reached out to me about a month ago on the website at beyondtheuniform.io, and his passion jumped off the email, off the page for me, just in terms of aligning what he does in his work with his personal goals. And I'm sure we'll get into this, but Bob had a great conversation with the gentleman when he got out of the military that just really impacted his career trajectory, and excited to dive into that and share that with the listeners as well. So, Bob, maybe to start off, anything to add to that background or correct in case I got anything wrong?
One thing I would add, Justin, is I am a little unique in that I have 2.5 years of broken time. So I left active duty as a captain, and I went out to corporate America for 2.5 years, and then I came back on active duty as an active reservist. So it's a little bit of a different career path, but it will weigh in on how I thought about things when I got ready to retire.
Awesome. Well, maybe we start with that. Let's go back to when you first decided to leave the military. How did you reach that decision? And how did you think about that first decision to leave the military?
Okay, well, it was primarily an emotional decision. My my two oldest children were very young at the time, and we had our hands full, and I was very busy deploying and flying a lot. And I just wanted to try something new. But that being said, I really didn't, I wasn't as circumspect at that time as I probably should have been. So after I got out, I kind of realized it wasn't the flying that I loved about being in the military. It was actually wearing the uniform. So being a Marine was really more important to me than I realized. So when I had the chance to come back on active duty, I jumped at the opportunity and was very grateful that I had that opportunity and that I was able to finish up my career.
I'm just wondering, especially for someone who's listening who might be in the military right now, is there any way you could have teased that out before you left? I mean, I think that's a common sentiment, is a lot of times people after a decision realize what they valued or what they liked. But I'm just wondering any way that you would advise them to think about that decision prior to making it.
Sure. I would say probably the most important thing you can do is talk to your family, of course, but really talk to your mentors in the military. And by mentors, I don't just mean your commanding officer. I mean the people who inspired you to either go in the service that you chose or the people, you know, within your military specialty that you really look up to and admire. And have a frank conversation with them and be upfront about the fact that you're considering getting out and listen to their feedback.
You know, sometimes I talk with people and I get the sense of fear of like not even wanting people to know that they're thinking of getting out or looking for jobs and trying to hide that. Do you have any, I know this is a little bit more impromptu, but do you have any advice on that as well, of whether that's justified or not, or how to have a little bit more freedom in that job search without worrying about perception or if that might adversely affect them?
Sure, that's a great question. Back at that point in my career, you know, I was a pilot, and a lot of pilots were leaving active duty to become airline pilots, and so we had a phrase for those pilots, and we called them quitter boys. And so as soon as somebody dropped their letter, you know, they were put into the quitter boy category. And the end result of that was if people were kind of thinking about leaving and pursuing either the airlines or something else, they kind of kept that close to the chest and were not willing to not only talk to the, you know, their mentors and people that could give them sound advice, but they didn't even talk to their peers because of that, you know, of the fear of being ostracized in the ready room, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's I can imagine like that would definitely prevent people from wanting to broadcast that.
Right, but I think at the end of the day, Justin, you really do want to reach out to those people that you're close with, that you have a good, you know, trusting relationship with, and have a frank conversation, because at that point in your career, oftentimes you don't know what your value is. And when you talk to somebody who's more senior and somebody who, you know, truly cares about you as an individual, they're able to give you some insights on, hey, you know, you need to stay in and here's why. Here's what you bring to the table that not many people do. Here's the value you bring to your MOS or to your service or to your country. So those are good conversations to have, and I think that most of the people who did what I did at that point and do have regrets, that's the common theme.
And at the point that you left for that first time before you joined reserves, is that when you kind of took this different path of hiring a PhD in psychology to help coach you through the transition?
No, but I was exposed to a company that he later purchased. And I liked the way that they did resumes. So I discovered them while I was out. The way I found my first job, Justin, was I went through Lucas, which is a company like Orion that helps junior military officers kind of find something to do after their military service. And all of those organizations are great. They're free, and it exposes you to a lot of companies. And that's how I found the company that I worked for during those 2.5 years. So, you know, that was good. But when I got ready to retire, I reached out to that resume company, and Steve Bangert had actually purchased that company in those, 10 or 12 years since. So that's how I was introduced to Steve.
I imagine that's a pretty good endorsement. If he's in a position to be buying companies, he's doing something right that adds a little bit of weight behind his advice.
Yes.
And so, I'm wondering, so how did you and Steve start working together, and what sort of things did you learn from him?
Sure. Well, Steve and I just clicked, and I think everybody can probably relate to that, but I initially reached out to him for some help on my resume, and then he explained to me that he also had a coaching service, but he had never coached someone from the military. He was used to coaching higher level people, for example, directors trying to be VPs or VPs trying to be CEOs or CEOs moving to another organization. But we just hit it off, and he was willing to coach me through the process, and he was very reasonable from a financial perspective. And so what he offered me initially was, hey, I'll help you put your resume together. I'll give you unlimited email correspondence. I'll talk to you for a half an hour each week. And he also offered to do a practice interview with me before every actual interview during the process.
What did those half-hour sessions look like, especially for someone, and I am a huge advocate of executive coaches and leadership coaches and any sort of coach, someone to just really hold you accountable, ask you probing questions to figure out what's right for you. But I'm wondering, how were those meetings structured, and how did they generally proceed?
Okay, well, again, Steve had a PhD in psychology. So he knew what he was doing, but the first thing he did was he had me tell him every job that I had since high school, and he would ask probing questions as I would respond. So, for example, he would say, well, what's the biggest lesson that you learned while you did that job, and who was the person that influenced you the most, and why was that, and how did you fail? What was your biggest failure during that job? And what did you do with that failure? Did you learn from it? Did you walk away from it? How did you incorporate that into your life experience? And so this took, several sessions to get through my entire adult life. But Steve had a pretty good idea of who I was and how I was wired by the time we were complete with that.
And then once he had that complete picture of you, how did he start to use that information to help channel you in the right direction?
Well, after we were done with that, Steve said, Bob, what do you want to do? Or another way to ask that is, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? So I launched right into my response, which was centered around my MOS and what I had done in the Marine Corps and how I thought that could translate into something in the civilian sector. So, for example, I said, well, I'm a fighter pilot. I could go work for Lockheed on the JSF in some, former fashion. And I was really relying heavily on what I had done, thinking that was the value that a company would see and hire me for. And I was about halfway through my response, and Steve said, okay, Bob, stop. He said, Bob, we're going to figure out what your perfect workday looks like according to you. And so that kind of caught me by surprise because I had no idea what he was talking about. But what Steve did at that point was he really walked me through a process. And again, this took, you know, several more sessions, but he walked me through a process that helped me figure out who I was as an individual. And he had some of that information from the things that we had already discussed. But, you know, we're all unique and we all have different life experiences and we all have different likes and dislikes. And it's important for us, and what I learned in this process, is the first place you have to start is with you, not with where the market is, not with what your qualifications are, certainly not with what your MOS is or was, but it's with you as an individual. So Steve really helped me get my hands around who I was. And really, that's the first time in my life that I had really done that because, you know, we've all got the picture of the ideal person for your specialty in the military. And I certainly had that. And that was what I was striving to be my entire career. But I had no desire to be an airline pilot, so it didn't really translate easily. And to make matters worse, I had no clue on what I wanted to do, which is pretty common for senior officers in the military. We don't know exactly what we want to do, and we try to marry it up to our MOS somehow. And I don't think that's the best way to do it. What Steve helped me figure out is, hey, here's who I am. And then after that, he helped me figure out what was important to me in my other roles in life as a husband, as a father, as a member of my community, how much time I wanted to have to do some of those things. And then after we had all those things figured out, Justin, then we were able to identify what I will call stake in the ground issues. So for example, my wife liked the house we were in and she had no desire to move. And so that became a stake in the ground issue for me. And so we identified all those stake in the ground issues. And then Steve said, okay, here are all of your stake in the ground issues. Now let's talk about the different kind of jobs out there that could enable you to have as many of these as possible. And that's how we approached the job search. So it was very, very different from what most people are exposed to. And most people's experience from the people that I've talked to, but it was very effective. And what I found, Justin, was every company that I have worked for since I left active duty, I didn't know anybody in the company, and I really didn't have a background to do what they were specifically looking for. But because I walked through that process with Steve, I was able to articulate the why better than the other candidates. So for example, I was able to tell them why I wanted to work for them, why I wanted to perform in that position and why I would be successful, and ultimately why I would bring success to that organization in that role. And that's really what companies want to hear.
I love so much of what you're saying. It makes me realize, so when I got out, I went to business school, and the very first question on the Stanford application is, what matters most to you and why? And I just remember the frustration and anger of that, of like just never having thought about that, of basically what you're calling the why, and how long that took to really chisel away, and how it challenged a lot of assumptions, like you had said, I found that I build up this reason of what I want or what I'm going after, and then when someone, like in your case Steve, challenges you and pushes you back, you're actually forced to reevaluate that and realize, like, hey, that's the why that mattered to me 5 years ago, but I need to revisit this and update this for where I'm at right now.
And exactly.
And what I think is even more surprising is, like, It's not a once and done thing. It's like something that throughout my career, I've had to revisit that 3, 4, 5 times, of just really going back to the drawing board of what is my why in this moment. And I like that thought that you're articulating, is once you solve for why, it's so much easier to figure out the how. And I'm just cognizant of how often I dive into the how right away. And maybe that comes from our military background of being problem solvers and execution and operating and wanting to get stuff done. But it's just amazing. As soon as I go for the how, I get entangled. But if I can take that step back and ask why, then like you said, you can explain it better to other people. You can explain it better to yourself. And it kind of aligns you more in the direction you need to go.
Exactly. And I think you hit the nail on the head. That's the biggest lesson that I have learned, Justin. And it wasn't just for my first job, because like you, I've had to back up and revisit the why again because my circumstances changed. So, for example, when I first retired, all my children were living at home, so I wanted to work from home so I could be around them during that period of their lives. But since then, they've all moved out. So it wasn't as important, and I had to evaluate, is that still a stake in the ground issue for me?
What is the, I'm just wondering, as you do approach these periods of questioning yourself, do you have kind of like a short form version then of that process? Is it like a formal process you go through, or is it just kind of thinking through what those stake in the grounds are and what matters most to you in that moment? Or how do you do this on your own now?
Well, what I did, and one thing I failed to mention, Steve Banger died shortly after I transitioned into my first job. He had an operation for a heart murmur, and it was unexpected. And so after he passed away, what I did, Justin, was I kind of laid everything out on a couple pages as far as the process that Steve walked me through. And that's what I use with other people to kind of help them go through that process on their own. I don't coach them like Steve coached me, but I kind of tell them my story and I give them that outline, and it helps them to kind of go through that process on their own and get their hands around, their stake in the ground issues, and gives them a little bit better foundation to go out there and experience the success that I've had. That's, an easy thing that I do. It's usually an hour or two phone call. And then I shoot him that email, and then we'll have a couple conversations after that.
I love that. I mean, I just love the, and we talked about this just before starting the recording, but I just think it's such a amazing tribute to Steve of the impact he had on your life, but how you're paying that forward and taking a process that seems to have really affected the trajectory of your career, and you're continuing to spread that. I think that's just a great way to honor his memory and the impact he had on you.
Yeah, one of the neat things that Steve did was he said, okay, Bob, we're going to figure out your perfect workday according to you. And then here's how he started. Okay, Bob, it's the morning of your perfect workday, and you just woke up. Where are you? And I said, well, I'm in Stafford, Virginia. And he said, well, why are you in Stafford, Virginia? You could be anywhere in the world. And I said, because my wife told me we're not moving. He said, okay. He said, okay, you're in Stafford, Virginia. What time is it? But then he would go into, okay, why? Why are you waking up at that time? And he would say, what are you wearing to work? Why are you wearing that? What does your office look like? Why? Who are you having lunch with? Why? What time are you done working for the day? Do you do any work after dinner? And he would, he would do the five whys and really drill down and help me figure out what the root, stake in the ground issue really was for me. So there wasn't any right or wrong answer. It just had to be yours. Mm. And that's what Steve helped me figure out. And after we went through that process of the perfect workday, what I thought I wanted to do at the beginning when we started and where I ended up, it was about 90 degrees out.
Wow. So you kind of went in with a preconception of what your ideal was, but then in going through in that, it sounds like in a very granular level of just very, very detailed, when you emerge, you realize like this is like completely different than what I thought I wanted.
Exactly. And what I ended up figuring out what I wanted to do, I had absolutely no background. So I didn't feel like it was an option because I didn't have any creds for that. But because Steve helped me figure out the why, knowing and being able to articulate the why overcame all of that.
I mean, that's I love that. And I think, you know, I'm a big fan of thinking that veterans are well qualified for I would say, any career out there. And I'm wondering, you know, once you have this clear sense of why, you know what you want, so it makes your search easier, and you know how to explain why, you know, why you want this to a potential employer. What other thoughts do you have on like, how does a veteran bridge that gap then, right? Is it confidence? Is it like building up skills? Or how do they look at a career that they think on paper, I have no qualifications for this job? Like, how do they then go and start interviewing and applying for that job?
Okay, well, those are good questions. What I would say is, we tend to get a little overwhelmed by the amount of information that's out there. For example, there's a book and it says 200 interview questions you need to be ready for, right? Well, who's got time for that, you know? and most military guys are going to interview for a lot of different types of positions. It could be a program manager, it could be a salesperson, it could be a business development person, it could be a vice president of a company. So, and you know, they're interviewing for all of these different positions at the same time. So it's really difficult, but really Steve helped me to winnow it down to three things. Here's why I want to work for your organization, right? So you do the background and learn about that company. So for example, before I worked at Amazon, I read the book, The Everything Store, about Amazon. And it gave me the history, what the work culture was like, and it really helped me understand the company, and I was able to share that in the interview. Well, most people didn't do that, so that certainly got their attention, and it helped me to demonstrate my genuine interest in working for Amazon. The other thing is, you know, why you are going to be successful in the role, and that takes a little preparation as well, but When you go through the process and you understand your why, you'll have a better idea of how you're going to approach that. So, for example, my first position was business development, and usually the challenge is, well, you don't have any sales background. And my response was, well, that's true. I don't have any sales background, but I was in recruiting in the Marine Corps, and I think we both know that that's a tremendous sales experience because Marines don't fail as far as the recruiting goals. So it's, you know, understanding your why, understanding what the interviewer is going to ask you, and having your response ready. And probably you'll appreciate this, Justin. Probably the best thing that Steve did for me is he said, "Bob, what's the one interview question that you fear the most?" And I said, "Well, it was my class standing at the Naval Academy." And he said, "Well, I don't know if you'll appreciate that because you were a nuke, but you know, I certainly could appreciate that." And so he said, "Okay." So then he launches right into the interview, and he's, you know, playing the role of the interviewer, and he starts hammering me on my class rank at the Naval Academy. And so I kind of stumble through it for a little while, and he lets me suffer. And then he goes, "Okay, Bob, let's stop for a minute." He said, "How long ago did you graduate from the Naval Academy?" And I said, 25 years ago. And he said, "Have you accomplished anything in the last 25 years that you're proud of?" And it just kind of, you know, it just kind of put a big light on how I was putting so much focus on something that bothered me, and I certainly didn't want anybody to ask me about it, but I failed to realize that I had done all these other things in the 25 years since. And so he said, okay, let's do it again. And then he, you know, right back into the interview mode, asked me the question, and I did a lot better. And then he gave me a few pointers, had me do it again. And by the time we were done, I was walking into interviews hoping somebody would ask me about my class rank.
That's great.
Yeah. So I think that confidence, you know, just kind of when you're ready to answer the question that you fear the most, and you're, you know, ready to the point that you're hoping they ask you, you're ready for anything. And that confidence really comes across in the interview.
I love that. I mean, it's that sense of it seems so military tactical in nature of like, what are our biggest weaknesses? What are the things we're most afraid of? And how do we turn that into a strength? And I can see in my own life, and I can imagine for a lot of people, those areas that make us fearful, we avoid them. You know, if you're worried about your class ranking in your undergrad, it's like it's something that you're avoiding and worried about and pushing away. But I love that thought of facing it and changing your nature to that question, to one where you're eager. I love that you said that you were like waiting for them to ask that, because you had an honest, aligned answer to that question. I think that's so powerful.
Yes. And your other question, Justin, was how do you find these jobs? Here's something that that I want to make sure that all your listeners know. I have found most of my jobs, and I think I mentioned this. I didn't know anybody in these companies. I didn't have, you know, somebody on the inside trying to hook me up or anything else. And it wasn't by design. That's just the way it was. But the way I found the opportunities was after I figured out what I wanted to do, and I had my hands around the why, and I knew what I was going to bring to the table for a certain kind of company. I went on LinkedIn, and at the top of that search bar, you know, you can search for jobs. And so I searched for jobs on that search bar on LinkedIn. And that's how I found these opportunities. And then I would, you know, I would see the opportunities that looked appealing. I would research on the company and say, hey, that's the one I'm going for. And so it was very cold. You know, in fact, it was completely cold. But I got the interview, and then I worked my way through the process and ultimately got the position.
Is that how you found your way to Amazon? Because Amazon is such an incredible company and such a highly sought after one.
Well, I think you could do it through Amazon, but that wasn't my path to Amazon. Amazon was a company because of what I did during those 2.5 years of broken time. You know, I worked in distribution and logistics, and so I had that, you know, that warehousing background. And I was a retired military guy, and Amazon likes the retired military folks. So they actually pursued me the whole time I was working for my first company. And I kind of held out until they let me do what I told them I would, I would leave my present company for if they would let me, you know, run a building in the D.C. area. So when that became available, then that's how I went to Amazon. But it was a 2-year dating process with them.
That's great. And you know, one other thing that stands out from what you were saying is this thought of preparing for interviews. And I like that you started talking about the Lucas Group and Orion as an opportunity to just get massive amount of practice and exposure very quickly and efficiently. And it seems like also through your work with Steve and your work on your own of preparing for these interviews, like not going in and just, you know, not just thinking you're going to handle whatever they throw at you, but actually thinking through what are they going to ask me? How do I explain it? How do you control that conversation? And I'm just wondering if you have any other thoughts on ways that you've prepared for interviews that you'd want to pass on to other veterans.
Sure. So I think for most companies, it's the three, you know, if you're prepared for the three questions and you research and you can back it up with data and metrics and personal experience, then you're going to be well prepared. And those three things, again, are why I want to work for this organization, why I'll be successful in this role, or actually why I want to work in this role, and two, why I'll be successful in this role for your organization. So really, those are the three things. If you've got your hands around that, you're going to be sitting, you know, pretty for the interview for the most part. But Amazon was very different. And when I worked at Amazon, you know, Amazon has leadership principles, and this isn't a, you know, company secret or anything. But when they interview you, it's against those leadership principles. So they're evaluating you against their internal leadership principles, which they publish on their website. So research involved with Amazon is, you know, one, understanding their leadership principles, and then being able to articulate how you've performed to those principles in your life up to that point.
And I'm wondering, you know, you talked about coaching, and I'm wondering specifically if someone's listening and they're wanting to go down this process, which I highly recommend. I just think that coaches are such a valuable resource, and like, you know, someone training for the Olympics, they don't do it alone. They have a coach. They have someone who can challenge them and really push them. And I think it's the same if you're trying to push yourself professionally. I'm wondering, any advice you would have on finding a coach? And also, you mentioned that you meet with people and you go through these questions. If you do that as well, or any thoughts on how someone might find the right coach for them?
Sure. Well, the first thing I would say is, you know, it has to be somebody that you mesh with. And Steve and I, you know, we just clicked. I can't really explain it. It just kind of happened, but we both recognized it, and it was a great relationship. And that was the primary reason why, in addition to all the valuable things that Steve taught me. But, you know, I would say have a, you know, strong, trusting, relational bridge with that person that you're coaching with. And if it's somebody with a similar background, I think that's ideal. So if you're military, you know, coming from the military, and you're interested in going into, you know, the world of finance or something, hey, find somebody with a similar background who works in finance that you have a personal connection with. Maybe, hey, maybe you went to the Naval Academy with them. Maybe they're a friend of a friend or a friend of a family member. But find, you know, find that person, and those are free resources. And many of those people, regardless of their title, are more than happy to help you. You just have to ask them. And I think that's the surprising thing, but, you know, for most of us. But, you know, there's a lot of presidents and vice presidents and CEOs that care about you just because of what you've done, and they're willing to help you. You just have to ask for the help. And on that note, you know, there's a great organization that I just found out about this week, and it's in San Diego, and it's through the Chamber of Commerce. And what they do is they connect veterans with people that are transitioning out of the military, and that's what they do. They mentor them through the process. And it's a great organization. It's pretty new. But it's all volunteers, it's all free, and it's some of the best, you know, things that you can get. And again, that's the Chamber of Commerce in Northern San Diego, and the program is called Operation Connect.
Operation Connect. And I'm just making a note of that. Two other that I would add on to that is the American Corporate Partners. It's something I've talked about on the show before, but it's come up on interviews, a very similar process of connecting veterans free of charge with someone in your desired industry to meet with you, mentor you, and advise you. And then even easier accessibility, lower weight is the on LinkedIn, the Veterans Mentor Network. They are a great, very responsive online community. You can post questions, you'll get a response that same day. So I throw out those as well. And as a reminder, at beyondtheuniform.io, I'll put links to all these in the show notes in case you're driving and want to look those up later. While we're on that topic, Bob, any other resources you can think of? You threw out the Everything Store, you threw out a couple other resources, but I'm wondering, as someone's thinking about their career or that transition, anything else that you would encourage them to consider to make that process easier?
Well, I think the one thing, and this is a common theme among people that I, you know, mentor and work with, and most of them are colonels. So, you know, colonels are, you know, very proud, and they're also very cheap. And so when I make the suggestion of, hey, you know, why don't you get some help on your resume? They don't even want to talk about it, because they look at it as a cost. And what I have learned in my experience, and a true story for you, is I paid, you know, $600 for my first resume for somebody to help me put it together. And again, I was doing something that was not related to my MOS specifically. You know, I was a pilot. I didn't want to be an airline pilot. I wanted to do something else. That's why I reached out for some help on my resume. But the people who do it well, they do it well, and they know what they're talking about. They know what the keywords are. It's very much worth the investment. So like I said, I paid $600 for that resume, and all my peers at the time laughed at me and said, well, I'm going to do it on my own. And so they did. And after we all transitioned into the civilian workforce, the difference in my pay and their pay for the first year was 100 times what I paid for that resume. So in what that means is, you know, my pay was $60,000 more a year gross than theirs. And the difference was I got help, or rather I invested in getting some help on putting my resume together.
I love that. I do think it's something that in the military we're not as accustomed to. I think everything is kind of provided in a way. We get paid for everything, food, clothing, housing, everything. And the one that's not allocated, but I think should be part of everyone's budget, is investing in yourself, whether that's professional development, personal development, and growth. And it is such a good investment. And it's like that, you know, overly used to the point of being trite adage, but it's true that it takes time to save time. Like, invest the money up front. It will pay so many dividends, whether that's with a coach or resume help or someone to help you figure out your career. It is so worth the money. And I think that the mindset that a lot of veterans, and I have taken this mindset as well to my own detriment, we take on is, I'm going to go it alone. I'm going to figure this out on my own. I can do it without any help. I'm going to do it as cheap as possible. And it's just not, it's not the smart approach. And, you know, a podcast that's great is Tony Robbins has a podcast, and he talks a lot about, you know, the difference of finding the best person. Like, just if you want to be good at something, if you find the best person at that and they spend an hour or two with you, it is better than 100 hours with someone else. And like,
exactly.
Or like with golf, right? You talk about like this 2 millimeter rule, that the difference of 2 millimeters makes all the difference in a great swing and an awful swing. And a truly great person can look at you and they've done millions of hours, hundreds of thousands of hours coaching, and they're able just to very quickly make those changes that will make all the difference. So I really appreciate what you're saying on that.
Yeah, so that's probably the biggest thing that I would say. You know, there's not any one book out there that's going to be the key to solving everything for you. But, you know, start reaching out within your network. Ask for, you know, somebody who does this. Hey, do you know somebody who does this? And to your point, find the best person that you can. And don't be intimidated by reaching out to them, because you'd be surprised at how many of them have so much to share, but they don't want to share it with people unless people want to hear it.
That's great. And I did want to make time, too, just to talk briefly about your work with Eaton. So what would you want people to know about Eaton and the, you know, your job, what that looks like from a day-to-day standpoint?
Sure. So one of the things I recognized about myself, Justin, is I hate having to get up at the same time every day and go into the same building and do the same thing. I just hate it. It's just, you know, it's not the way that I'm wired. And so I need more variety in my life. I also live in the D.C. area, and I don't want to be part of the herd, you know, heading up the 95 every day and coming back at the same time, because it takes such a big chunk out of your life, just to commute. So the beautiful thing about business development for guys like us is there's a lot of companies out there that do and make great things that the military needs, but they don't know how to talk to the military. So they don't know how to get on a base. They don't understand how the services are organized. They don't know what the ranks are. They're embarrassed if they call a sergeant, a major, and, you know, things like that. And so they just don't want to go there. So your average military professional who likes people and who's genuine and who has a good reputation, and by good reputation, I don't mean, you know, that you were on the A-team the whole time you were on active duty, but, you know, when you walk into a base and people know you, it's positive, you know, and if you're that type of person, there's a lot of companies that are looking for you just to help them penetrate the DOD or the federal government, because that's been your world for however many years. So the interesting thing that I've learned about business development is it's not your last job. The customers that I've had in my role as a business development person had absolutely nothing to do with any job I ever had. In fact, you know, NAVFAC is a big customer of mine, and I was a Marine pilot, and those are Navy engineers. You know, so it's about as far away as you can get, really, from an MOS perspective. But it has nothing to do with whether you will be successful in the job, or especially if you'll get the job. It all has to do with, you know, do you like people? Are you willing to learn about what that company does? And then figure out how things are organized in your customer. So for example, my customer is the Navy and the Marine Corps, and it's understanding who's who in the zoo and organizing conversations and bringing the right people to the table so that they can talk turkey. And I mean, at the end of the day, it sounds pretty simple, and it is. But I think some of the benefits are, you know, I get to travel, I get to set my own schedule, I get to plan most of my travel, and I don't have to wake up at the same time every day and go into the same building. And that's something that was really important to me.
I love that too, because it sounds like those are things that you uncovered in this process of realizing these are things that are important to me, and that's you know, aligns you better and maximizes the possibility that you're going to find a career that makes you happy. And I think that's awesome. Well, I know we're short on time, so I always like to end by just turning it over to you. And I know we've covered a lot about a variety of topics, but I'm just wondering, knowing that you have an audience of veterans and active duty members, anything, be it personal or professional, that you'd want to share with them, or final words of wisdom you'd like to give them?
Sure. Thanks, Justin. So I've been retired for 6.5 years now. And some of the things that I've learned are, hey, it's different after you leave active duty. The people are different, and your motivations are going to be different. And one of the things you need to kind of figure out how to do is relax, because most things just aren't as important as they were when you were wearing a uniform. And that's okay. So that's one thing. It's okay to relax. The other thing I would say is, hey, dream big. You know, you've paid your dues, you've served your country, And now you have a retirement if you retired. I'm talking to people that have retired. You know, you've got a retirement income and you've got health benefits, and that's huge because it gives you a lot of latitude to explore what you would really love to do and start moving in that direction. Don't just take a job because you need a paycheck, although that's a good short-term interim solution, perhaps. But dream big. You know, talk to your spouse, talk to your family, talk to your mentors, and because really you can do whatever it is that you really want to do. You just have to figure out what that is.
Well, this has been great, Bob. I appreciate your time and appreciate all the advice. So thank you for joining me today.
You bet. Thanks, Justin.
Service.
Thanks for listening. Before you go, three important announcements. First, if you believe in what I'm doing and believe in supporting veterans in their careers, please help me spread the word. The best way I know to do that right now is by taking 18 seconds to write a review on iTunes. It would mean a lot. Second, based on my interviews, I'd advise any and all veterans to look at servicetoschool.org and the American Corporate Partners. Both are completely free for veterans and give you a lot of great resources for your education or professional life, respectively. Third, there are a ton of other great interviews, resources, and data at beyondtheuniform.io. Check it out, share it with your friends, and drop me a line if you have any feedback because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and see you on the next interview.